Over the last 3 weeks, as we have socially distanced ourselves from one another, one industry, if we may call it that, is roaring in its newfound strength and novel kinds of service opportunities. This industry, as one joke puts it, is composed of hospitals, food banks, social programs, rehab facilities, and of course, spiritual development. Even more, it runs in all countries, in one form or another, and it's now at the head of caring for those in need. Or at least, it should be. In the turn of a couple days, churches opened, buildings closed, pastors became YouTubers, by the way, check out the Busy Pastor channel, and creative ways of ministry became the norm. Yet the looming question, one that has been since the initial treasurer disappeared after kissing the recent savior, is, how is this massive organization going to survive? People are losing their jobs, which in turn makes them give less, which in turn deploys less people in the field to help those people who lost their jobs. Circular economics hits us once again. Check out the TED Talks on the topic of circular economics, by the way. So, is it true? Is the church bringing in less money than it did a month ago? Well, it's a complicated answer. In the US, we've heard of pastors being laid off, possible pay cuts, and in some cases, stability, at least for a little while. Yet, today is not about the US edition, although it will bring some implications for the future US edition. We are on the UK edition today. So, how's given on the other side of the pond? Luke White, a volunteer church planter, and Vili Costescu are going to guide us through this conversation. Luke works for a charity, and he's going to give us some insight into it.
So, let me tell you what the most fascinating thing has been. Over the month of March, I don't know the exact numbers, but I can tell you that year on year, so looking at the money that was donated to my organization through the month of March, it was double this time last year. In addition, it was also roughly double the previous month, so February's giving. Now, these numbers, I haven't got the final figures, but let's just say it drastically increased. So we're talking in the hundreds of thousands here. We're not talking pennies, right? And so what we're seeing is that, who knows the reason why, but what we're seeing is that people are responding to the need, right? So another thing that my charity has been able to do is they've raised a emergency relief fund, which we're trying to build up to 15 million since 2 weeks ago. We're up to 3 million at the moment. So this is an emergency fund which churches that are in desperate need can apply to and receive funding, right? So this is what I'm seeing in this other organization. And then I'm lining this up with what I'm seeing in the Adventist Church, and I'm seeing a disconnect, which is huge, because the vibe and the feeling that I'm sensing from our denomination is that tithe is going to be hit, giving is going to be hit. And so as a result of that, we need to go on the defensive. And I'm struggling with that because I've heard before this pandemic hit, I've heard that at other times in our history, be it the recession in 2008, be it other things that have happened where the global economy was hit, giving has always increased or maintained. History shows that in crises, the giving has, at least here in the UK, and this was something that I had heard numerous times prior to this pandemic, was that the members have still remained faithful. That's the term I would hear. Like, the members have still remained faithful. Like, you know, money is tight, but the members have still remained faithful. And so I'm looking at this and I'm looking at the context, and then I'm seeing that, at least here in the UK, a number of our, at least in the south of England, which England obviously is just one country in the UK. So, you know, the UK is Wales, Ireland, Scotland, and England. England is, even though we're one island, the United Kingdom, England is really where, kind of the centre in a way, because London is in England and Parliament and everything is in London. And so England is kind of the hub of the UK. Here in England, in the south of England, which is the conference to which I belong, we have taken the decision to furlough a number of our pastors.
So it may be a perspective conundrum after all. Maybe the church is receiving more from its faithful members? Maybe not. We'll have to wait and see and let the math prove us wrong or right at the end of the year. Yet one thing is clear, at least in the South England Conference. There have been some pastors going on furlough. Billy Costescu is one of them, and here is his reaction to the reality of furlough.
Right. I would like to share something that, it, in my opinion, is important for your listeners to understand. As I said, I lived in the United States, and now I'm a citizen of the Great Britain and Northern Ireland, the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. In America, the church doesn't pay taxes. Here, we do not benefit from that tax break. The church and all the charities benefit from in America. Here we pay taxes, and the government gives us back 25% of all the donations that we receive. In other words, if our church receives $100 in donations from our members, and these members are taxpayers to the government, the government gives us 25p back. So the system is quite different. We don't benefit like the churches in America benefit. We have a different system that we have to abide by. Therefore, since we are contributors, all of us, we contribute to the church, and the government doesn't give me anything back as a tithe payer or giving a gift to the church. The government gives the church or that charity something back according to their own rules, which, in all honesty, are quite fair. Are quite fair. There is no discrimination between us and the Church of England. Well, the Church of England is a bit different because the priests and the vicars and the bishops, they are paid by the government. The Queen is also the head of the church. Maybe we can talk another time about this. So given these fundamental differences, we need to understand that it would be unwise of the church not to take advantage of a program that is put by the government. This program is for 3 months only, starting March the 1st. March, April, we are in the middle of it, and May. That's why in the British Union and in the South England Conference where I work, the church decided to take advantage only of 2 months of these three, because we did not anticipate that it was going to be made available to us as well. So we've discussed, there was a workers' meeting on Zoom like we have now with over 140 pastors. We discussed and we agreed upon taking turns how we're going to be on furlough. More so, I would like to say that when it comes to the salary and pension, you know, retirement benefits and all these benefits that everybody benefits from, we are not going to lose anything. We are not going to lose even a penny because the government will pay 80% and the conference will top up with the rest of the 20%. So the conference took the wisest decision regarding us as employees and workers and pastors.
Now you may be thinking, wow, okay, that sounds pretty good. You are on furlough, which means you're at home, you're not working, you receive 80% of your pay from the government and 20% from the conference. So pastors keep their jobs, churches keep their pastors, everyone happy. Well, not so fast. There's something else that we have to explore, but we'll explore that a little bit after the break. Thank you for listening to Disruptive Adventism. We'll see you right after. Thank you for listening to Disruptive Adventism. Today we're talking about churches and COVID-19, UK edition. So as we have learned, churches in the UK have to pay taxes. So the conferences over there, some of them, not all of them, but at least the South England Conference has taken the decision of using the government's money, the 80%, to pay the pastors. Now, this is a simplification. Of course, there are more things that we need to understand, and that's where we're heading now. What is the trade-off? What is the thing that the church has to do or the employees cannot do in order to receive this 80%? Vili continues with the explanation.
There is a challenge, and that is, according to the law or the regulations that are put in place during this time, we are not supposed to do any work and not even volunteer for the organization we work for, and that is the church. And that created a little bit of confusion, but I don't think it's a problem. It's an opportunity for us to get used to a system that was supposed to be in place in the first place, whereby the church, the elders, the deacons, all the departmental leaders are actively involved in what's happening in the church, and the pastor can and should focus on outreach and mission. So I don't see here any tragedy. I will give you my own personal story. I don't speak on behalf of the organization. In December, we had a workers' meeting, and I stood up and I said, if the financial situation does not improve in our conference, please know that as of 1st of January 2021, I'm happy to work as a volunteer as long as you maintain my credentials. I will look after the same district, same church. I will comply to the same rules, but with no pay. That's what I said in December, without knowing what's going to happen. In this situation, when area coordinators, you know, our conference is split in 9 areas, they called us, and I said to my coordinator, I volunteered to be the first. And if any of my colleagues that have small children, it's a very tiny, you know, it's a very tiny financial reduction. Yeah. Since my daughter is already married, we don't have much obligations. I'm happy to do the full of work for another colleague as well. I have an associate pastor who is a volunteer. He's 83 years old, Pastor Arthur Campbell. And I can tell you that we've been having regular meetings with the elders on Zoom. I managed to train him remotely how to use Zoom. So the church did not stop existing. We have prayer meetings. I do short devotions. Our conference has a church service on Sabbath. We all have cell phones. I'm able to talk to my members over the phone. I receive emails from senior members of the church. So the church did not stop. It's only the building that has closed for, you know, health reasons. But the church did not stop. The church will move forward, and the church will go forward with or without me and you, if I may.
The organization will go forward without me or without you, which is very true. But we as members have a responsibility. And after COVID-19, after this crisis goes and fades away, after we go back to our jobs, things are going to change. Church is going to be different, and we cannot remain in the status quo. Luke continues with this idea.
Yeah, because the underlying principle is not changing. This idea of before this all happened, the reason why we weren't embracing the digital space was because, again, we were preserving all right. We were okay. Why change it? The members were coming. The members were giving their money. We were basically afloat. Well, why do you want to rock the boat? Why do you want to change things? It's fine how it is. So the digital space was always neglected, although the digital space there's always been more opportunity there than ever before. I've been fortunate over the last 3 or 4 years to travel around the world a little bit, giving training on social media and things like that, because that's my other passion. And as I talk about it, what I've seen is that, look, guys, and I say this all the time, for the last 5 years, at a touch of a button, you have the ability to go live potentially to everyone who has internet. At the touch of a button, it's unprecedented. In the reality is that in the not too distant past, you needed hundreds, thousands of pounds to be able to broadcast, to be in front of anyone. We've got it at a touch of a button, and we weren't taking these opportunities seriously. And that, so that, that culture of not changing, of self-preservation, although the circumstances have changed, that spirit is still there. That spirit is still there, because what we're seeing is, and one thing I am heartened by and kind of impressed by, is that a lot of the churches that are still able to present, like connect with the digital space, it's because their young people are taking the initiative, because we natively know how to do this stuff. And so the same young people that weren't really given opportunities before, they have to be relied on now because they understand this language. It's like, it's like going to a foreign country and you have to rely on the person who can speak that language. you can't muddle your way through. But what we're seeing instead is some places are letting the young people run free, and in other places we are trying to recreate the same space that existed in the church in the digital space. Why are you preaching from an empty church? Like, you know, in a mutual group that we're both a part of, that conversation came up. Like, why are you live streaming a service from an empty church? It doesn't. why are you preaching from in a suit from your sofa? I mean, what are we doing here? It's kind of absurd. It just makes no sense. And again, it's part of that fact. It's like we still want to. It's like English people. There's a joke, you know, here in the UK. Basically, English people are terrible. We're the only kind of culture who don't bother to learn any other language. So we go to another country and we just speak slower. Where is the toilet? Like, we go to Africa. Can I have a burger? Like, we're still speaking English, but we're going to these other countries, and we think if we just slow it down, they'll learn it. And this is kind of, it's the equivalent of what we're doing, what I see happening in the digital space. Like, the churches are just slowing it down a little bit for the online world, but everything else looks the same. Like, you're not actually integrating because you don't understand that a podcast behaves differently from a YouTube video, from a 5-minute talk, or it doesn't translate in the same way. And hopefully in time we can get there, but from my history and what I've seen in the church is that we just want to do it how we want to do it, and we just don't want to listen. But if we're really gonna, we need to translate. We need to learn a new language. And it's like we don't want to invest in the translators.
We want to learn a new language and we don't want to invest in the translators. Very, very true words right there. We need to take another break. And when we're back, we're going to finalize this UK edition of COVID-19 and churches with some implications for the US edition. Thanks for listening to Disruptive Adventism. We'll see you after the break. Welcome back to the final segment of Disruptive Adventism. So as we have learned on today's episode, in the UK, churches pay taxes. And as a result of that, the church, our organization, has decided to receive money from the government, which in turn ties the hands of pastors. But it's not only ending there. We also need to invest during this crisis to get to the 21st century. There is a lot of things going on right here, and in the UK, we're starting to see what may come to the US. The US government has put up a program of assistance for nonprofits, like our conferences in the United States. We're going to explore that in the next episode, however. We continue with how the mission is looking like in the UK for this episode.
Nothing. Life is not going to be moved online. They talk about the digital economy and things like that. It's an exaggeration, in my opinion, because the economy is still, factories doing something, manufacturing something, and sending it to us. We don't eat digital food. Yeah. we still eat bread and drink water. And the same will be with the church mission. Some elements will never go digital. Yeah, a baptism will always be analog. A communion will always be analog. They are trying all kinds of experiments now with the Easter. Yeah, this weekend is the Catholic Easter and then the Orthodox Easter. Coming from Romania, you know, I observe both because Romania is an Orthodox country. So certain things will never go digital. They will always be analog. However, the mission of the church will continue. It will have to change. I would like to remind all my American brothers and sisters and ministers that it's not because I'm saying so. There are many scholars that would back what I'm saying now, is that America is about 10 to 15 years behind Europe when it comes to secularism and all these cultural shifts that are happening. It looks like in the last 2-3 years, you try to catch us up. And then I would like to see how my brothers and sisters and my fellow ministers will react, because we've been facing the unknown for the last decade. We were hit and we didn't know where the bombs were coming from. Yeah, it's not only the Adventist Church. The Church of England suffers the same. All other churches are suffering the same. The consequences of secularism. We pass postmodernism. Yeah? We are post-postmodernism right now. The mission will have to adapt to the realities we live in. One thing I'm sure of, that love, compassion, empathy will have to stay the same or even increase. Involvement in the community. I'm proud to say that my church offered shelter for homeless during the winter. We are trying to be as present as possible in the community. Before the lockdown, I met with the local vicar of his church is only 100 yards from my church. He's new, like I just moved to this church last November, and we were thinking, we are planning, we are working in downtown, to use an American term, in town center. And we were looking around and said, you know, this is a city that needs Jesus. There's something we can do to bring Jesus back to this city. So moving into digital, absolutely. Many things will have to move into digital. Mm-hmm. But traditional things, as I mentioned, will have to stay in the analog. How we harmonize the two is the key to success. And I would like to say this, you know, back in my youth, I used to do all kinds of stuff, including smuggling Bibles, which was, you know, punishable by law. But I did it anyway. Should one of my members desperately need my help right now, as on furlough, I don't care. I'm going to go and help that person, you know, just in case it's happening. And I inform my members, if you really, really need something, don't hesitate to call me because I'm on furlough. And if no one else can sort it out, I will go and sort it out. I will take this risk. So I go to this extent. It's not as bad as it may look. Yes, we'll have more funerals than usual. This is the reality. Percentage-wise, more people are dying. And we, as a church, are part of the society. But we will go through this. And I have full confidence in my colleagues and in my elders, in my leaders. I'm not worried. So both from a conference point of view and from my personal point of view as a minister, I'm confident that the church will get through this. And we'll look back and we'll tell stories to our grandkids how it was in 2020 when we had this lockdown.
It is very true. Our mission cannot go fully digital, but it cannot remain fully analog. We need to be the change, and we need to be the change now. Luke is going to close out this episode with a final word, and then look out, because the US edition is coming.
Final word. I did a Facebook Live today where I basically said to the young people, at least in my network, that the time is now to rise up. I honestly believe, I don't know who the demographic is who listen to this podcast, but I honestly believe that now is the opportunity for us as a generation to really take hold of the future of our church. Unfortunately, there are going to be a lot of people we're going to have to bury. And as a result of that, the age of the church, the median age of the church is going to come down, because unfortunately there are many older people who are not going to be with us. I've read articles about this. This is not me being a pessimist. This is just the reality of when this is all over. That's going to be one of the impacts of it. In addition to that, as I said, we can be the economic drivers of this organization if we want to be. And then couple that with the fact that we are the ones who have the know-how of how to do this in the digital space, means that what's being created is almost the perfect climate for our generation to really rise up and to determine the trajectory and the future of our organization. So my final thought would simply be that, guys and girls, really understand the moment that we're in. And if you really are invested in this organization, if you definitely want to see a change, the climate may never be like this in our lifetime again. And so I would just say, let's work together. Where one maverick raises her head above the parapet, it's easy to chop it down. But if we all are saying, hey, this is now the moment where we want to see change, and we want to see things move, then now is the time. Let's rise up. Let's storm the castle. Let's do what needs to be done. Let's vision cast together. Let's do this. Let's put our money, our energy, our time, our effort into this, because now is the time.